Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Michael Wilbon about the U.S. Open and the World Cup. We'll also check in with Steve Sands to get his thoughts on Wyndham Clark winning his second U.S. Open amid jeering. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
In yeah. Toronto, biggest city in Canada, biggest province in Canada. And what does FIFA do to help out the RBC Canadian Open and the good people at Golf Canada who run that event?
What?
Let's put Canada in Toronto in game one of the World Cup at 3 p.m. on Friday, head-to-head against the golf tournament. Oh, man, the people up there were not happy about the schedule in there from FIFA, but whatever. The World Cup blows. Who cares?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Sands will be on with us later. Sands always sends notes like, sports is great. I love sports. Yes. Apparently not soccer.
No.
Not soccer. Let's do some business. Our dear friend Greg Garcia is appearing where and when this weekend?
At the Arlington Cinema and Draft House this Friday and Saturday for four shows. He's opening up for Nick Thune.
Okay.
So his stand-up, his burgeoning stand-up career continues.
It's wonderful. Go yeah. see him.
Go see him. Arlington Cinema and Draft House this
Go
Friday and Saturday.
We want to thank Barry Snyder. Barry Snyder, who writes, as I know, Dr. Tony receives gifts from littles and bigs. I'd like to send some award-winning Panamanian rum to Dr. Tony as a thank you for the countless hours of entertainment and for making me laugh when I need it most. Where can I send the rum? So the rum was sent to Nigel.
That's right.
There were two bottles of rum and a hat. The hat was a cool hat. It
yes.
is a cool hat.
It's a nice Panama
it's
hat.
It's a summer hat. It's not, it is a Panama hat. It's not a straw Panama hat, which
no.
I'm used to. No, it's a heavier material than that. It's very nice. And I have to confess, I am, of course, unburdened by memory, but I don't ever remember drinking rum in my life. I just don't. So I asked Nigel, what is the number one characteristic of rum? And you said it was sweet.
Yeah.
Very so sweet. Sugary.
Sugary,
And
yeah.
then you said that people have it with Coca-Cola, yep. rum and Coke, which I've heard of.
Right.
Why would you add to the sweetness by dipping it in with other sweet stuff? I'm not a rum person.
No.
I'm not. I don't.
You never had a dark and stormy with all that time you spend on boats?
Nothing. No rum. We don't keep
captain.
Rum.
The captain, we thought for sure you would
no,
like it.
No. But maybe I've had it, but I don't recall it
like
ever.
A daiquiri or anything like that?
I've seen daiquiris. I'm not sure I've ever had a daiquiri. I'm not sure. You know, it just, if I've had them, it was a long time ago. Michael, are you a rum person? I'm not a rum person.
To me, rum is something that's very time and place. So like if you're at a setting where dark and stormy is appropriate, all the way.
Okay, so I'm not a rum guy. Did you open it? Did you open your bottle? I mean, we're very grateful for the bottle.
Yes, I did not sample
okay.
it over the weekend.
Okay, so you don't have to.
But no, but I on occasion I like rum, so I'm sure
okay.
this is very good.
So I was, yeah, it's award winning.
Yeah,
sure. So I went to Delaware on Friday, came back yesterday. At my age now, that's, even though it's a 3-hour drive, it's, you know, I have to take a nap afterwards. I'm tired.
A 3-hour tour.
A 3-hour tour, yeah, because I'm, not just because I'm old, I concentrate. You know, you're driving, you have the responsibility of making sure that everybody in the car is okay, including Chessie. So, and Chessie is, I don't know this, I don't know what other dogs do. Chessie does not lay down during a car ride. She sits up.
She's
awake, so
she's
that when
it.
She gets home, she can nap for a while. But she's, you know, it's like she's driving, too. She's very involved in that. I played golf a couple of times at Rehoboth.
Do you find the drives through the small towns in Delaware just give your eyes a little bit of a break where you're paying
like
attention,
them.
But it's not the same demands as being on 50
yes.
or being on the Beltway?
Yes. The little towns where you're going 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Because they're speed traps. Yes.
Don't go 26.
Happy. Greenwood is one of them. Yeah. Greenwood and Ellendale.
Yep.
Happy.
Yeah.
Ellendale. Happy to be in them. Happy to be in them.
Does the leg bother you on these drives?
No, it hasn't. I thought about that yesterday, that neither time has my hamstring bothered me. So that was good. That was good. But I played golf twice, lost money once on a team we lost. We came in second or third. There were only three teams, so we had to come in second or third. We didn't win. $15 a man. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. I probably shot about 91, 93, somewhere in there, both days. I mean,
Did you pick up some trash?
No, didn't pick up any chips because I didn't make any putts. I didn't make any putts.
I figured with your bunker play.
No, well, I luckily wasn't in the bunkers all that often. When I was in, I just took a club to get out and didn't try to hit a sand shot, just tried to lift it out, you know what I mean? As if it were a pitching wedge from 50 yards out. I tried to do that, and it was all right. The only thing I couldn't do, because I've got a shoulder problem now, I've got a rotator cuff problem, and I was in a lot of pain, and I couldn't hit 3-wood at all. Topped it, just kept it in the bag the second day, topped it 3 times the first day, put it in the bag, never took it out the second day. So, you know, maybe you can help me with that. No, it was no good. It was no good, but it was fine. Fine to play, fine to come home. And then what I did is I watched the U.S. Open. Yesterday, of course, the longest day. So we should all be sad because it gets worse from here, but I'm not going to go through that again. I'd go through that every year. I watched a lot of the U.S. Open yesterday. Got home certainly in time to do it. Left very early in the morning, got home. And just watched, and I will say, there's a couple of things. We'll talk to people about this. I say all the time that you can't win. You can only lose a tournament on the first day. You can't win a tournament on the first day. But in fact, Wyndham Clark won the tournament on Thursday. He continued to win it at various points. He went wire to wire. He shot 64, which I think might have been the lowest. Michael, was that the lowest score in 4 days by anyone, 64?
I think so.
Yeah, and he shot it on Thursday. He's -6 going into Friday. And
it's a nice cushion.
Yeah, he never loses the lead. He was never tied. Yesterday, as badly as he played, and he said he played badly, he never even was tied. Because Sam Burns, who I think is the best statistical putter on the tour, didn't make the putts. Now, they weren't like 4-foot putts. They were long putts.
No, but once you got to 17 and 18, those were very makeable birdies, the one on 17 in particular.
And he missed them both. He missed them both. So Wyndham Clark never felt the sting of being tied, never could say to himself, well, I've blown the lead. He continued to lead all the way. Scottie Scheffler looked him in the eye and didn't beat him. Didn't beat him at all. You know, I mean, and that's going to make Wilbon happy because Wilbon just can't stand Scottie Scheffler because someone compares him to Tiger. So anybody who's compared to Tiger, Wilbon hates. So except Jack. It's okay. Jack's okay. But... you know, Scheffler had the opportunity, head-to-head, didn't do anything special. At the end of the tournament, there's only 3 people under par. After 72 holes, there's only 3 people under par.
You finally got Shinnecock.
Yes. Let Shinnecock be Shinnecock. And without with wide fairways, even. With wide fairways for people to land well. Nobody can say, right, Michael? Nobody can say anything other than it was a wonderful tournament, yes?
Wonderful tournament. The USGA was outspoken that they wanted to finally get this one right at Shinnecock, and I think they probably erred too much on the caution side when you got to the fears of what the wind would have done on Thursday, so they probably made it a little bit too soft. But going into the weekend, they sent out a notice. We're going to speed the greens up by about a foot and a half. We're going to put these pins on some of those slopes where it's a little bit harder to hold the general area. You saw that on the final day. Shots looked pretty good. They skirt by. You saw that all week at number 7. It's amazing to see those par threes play as difficult as they are when they don't look like much if you just look at the scorecard. But you think about Wyndham Clark staring down Scottie Scheffler after the round on Saturday. He spoke and said, I'm pretty happy to have this cushion of lead over that one guy. Scheffler would have been where he felt the pressure the most. He didn't really apply any. And Sam Burns just sort of ran out of gas to try and get to him at the end. I think this is a rehab tour for Wyndham Clark, who after yesterday's round openly spoke about hearing the people jeering him and actually I understand why, and being very gracious about what Scheffler was trying to win in terms of finally closing out the career Grand Slam. And understanding that, you know what, I sort of have to own a little bit of why you people are jeering me as well. And he compared it to what happened in 2023, which actually motivated him when you had everyone rooting for Rory down the final stretch. So I think he gained a lot of fans, but I think you're right. It was a tournament that he really won it on day one.
He won it there. He gave himself a big lead there. He never relinquished the lead. He made, on Saturday and Sunday, with not playing particularly well, He made some great par-saving putts.
From
4 to 8 feet.
Did you hear Seth? I think he was making about 81% going into the final round, and those are the ones. They always talk about the par saves at U.S. Opens. He made those putts.
He did those, and he threw in a 35-foot birdie putt on 16. Yeah. You know, this was there for the
taking. After being out of position off the tee and played the correct shot with that third.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, which bounced up onto the green. He did everything he was supposed to do. It did not look particularly pretty. And it was there for somebody else. It was there for Scheffler. It was there for Burns. You know, then other people just totally receded on Saturday and Sunday. You know, Matty Fitz, Wilbon's guy, gagged it up Saturday early. You know, like three bogeys in the first four or five holes. Rory McIlroy on Friday and
went
Saturday
backwards.
In the afternoon went backwards. And on Sunday, he's lost. Yeah. Like he's, you know, plus six or plus seven. He's nowhere near.
Great super cut of, you know, you have Spieth who sort of is mock, you know, breaking his putter over his knee because he can't make anything. You
right.
Know, Tagala losing the club in the fescue just because it's so difficult. Some weird stuff happened. You look at Keith Mitchell who went out on the first nine.
70, 70, 70, 70.
Yeah, and
41.
Then he posted all par rounds.
He did something that's never before been done. It's a minor thing. It's like when Wilbon goes 5, 5, 5, 5, and 5. He went all four rounds. He hit the same number, 70. It's never been done. Par. You know, he had a great tournament for him because he was not a threat to win. Nobody ever picked him to win or anything like that. So, I mean, I found it interesting to watch, satisfying, yes. And we'll talk to Sands about this.
If you were watching all weekend, what do you think of the crowds?
I thought the crowds, look, I don't hear what they're saying because I'm watching it on television from hundreds of miles away and I'm not, I can't hear anymore. I thought the crowds were very, very good. It was beautiful there. It was simply beautiful.
Kind of emptied out the last couple hours.
I guess. I mean, maybe they don't like...
It's hard to get to.
Yeah. You want to get out. You want to make sure you're not stuck.
Got to catch a train.
The end of Long Island. There are trains and buses to Manhattan or whatever was happening. I felt it was odd to me that they really didn't like Wyndham Clark. I assume this has to be... because of Oakmont. Because here's Wyndham Clark is
all
an American.
Oakmont.
He's an American winning the American National Championship. This is not the Ryder Cup on Long Island where people booed Rory. No, it's not that.
Yeah, he's one of yours.
This is on Long Island, an American winning the United States National Championship. So that was surprising to me. But he's the guy who destroyed the lockers, a few lockers at Oakmont last year at the Open. And I may be wrong about this. I believe he has said prior to yesterday he regretted what happened. I don't know that I ever heard him say, I'm sorry for what happened. There is a big difference between regret and sorrow. It's a big difference here. English majors understand this. Yesterday he said he was sorry for, I think, the first time. In accepting the award, he said, yeah, you know, you guys don't like me. You know, he acknowledged that. And to go out there, and I will give credit to Julie Ellion, who is his sports psychologist.
Not anymore.
Oh, they're not together?
Yes.
But they were on the range together.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I thought there was a year ago where they were no longer working together.
No, I think they were on the range together yesterday. They showed that early in the round. When Clark was getting ready, and she's got a book out.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't maybe, but I assume one of the things she did for Wyndham Clark was caution him. You may not be popular out here. You're in the same group as Scottie Scheffler, who is very popular out here. They may turn against you. Here is how you deal with that, right? Wouldn't you think that was part of it?
Mm-hmm.
I would. I don't know. I mean, although I did text Rick Ellion last night and said congratulations to everybody because, you know, I there's no reason to believe they're not together, Julie Ellion and Wyndham Clark, right? You were looking in your...
Yeah, I was looking
at
your phone.
Looking this up.
So look it up. So, you know, we can work with that. But that's what I sort of assumed. And he was good. I mean, they were cheering against him to such a degree... I was getting texts about this that people were yelling, get in the bunker. Like,
there were
Clark
fans
would
who
hit
were
a
escorted
shot.
Off the property. Before.
Yeah, people were thrown out. This doesn't happen. this doesn't happen. The USGA identified some people who were being particularly hard on Wyndham Clark and threw him out. Wyndham Clark, by the way, Wyndham Clark is not a guy, I didn't think, like Patrick Reed, who reveled in the fact that nobody likes him. Wyndham Clark, this is his second U.S. Open. Now, if that's all you win is two U.S. Opens, it doesn't mean you're one of the all-time greats. Lee Jansen, not one of the all-time greats, won two U.S. Opens, but a second U.S. Open is a pretty big deal. And he's won on both coasts. He won in Los Angeles.
Two big tracks.
Yeah, Los Angeles Country Club and Shinnecock. These are heralded courses. Did you look it up?
Yeah, from what I can tell, they are still working together.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, because they showed her on the driving range yesterday morning. So I assume if they were, you know. But things happen.
Yes.
You know, like Wyndham Clark dumped his caddy and brought on a new caddy, right, Michael? Within the last year? Big wave, well, Dave?
Clearly, I need to do more of my homework on Wyndham Clark, but I can root for him again if he's working with Julie.
Yeah, and if he said he was sorry, that's important, because what he did is really bad, and it's not. You can't just write a check.
I regret
and
that.
Make it good. It doesn't work that way. No. You destroyed lockers at Oakmont. Yeah, Stop it! Is that you didn't go into a pitch and putt and bang something down? This is Oakmont. This is one of the revered tracks in America. This is in the rotation on the U.S. Open. You can't just break a bunch of lockers. I mean, everybody wants to do that occasionally, but you don't, right, Michael? You don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. So, okay.
Did you see the thing? And forgive me for not remembering the name of the golfer, but he swapped out his caddy at 18.
That was the young kid, the 17-year-old
kid.
Yeah,
right.
With permission from the USGA. There were five amateurs who did great in this tournament, absolutely great. And he was one of them, 17-year-old kid. He's a lefty, right? He's a lefty. Mm-hmm. And on the 18th fairway, he had already hit his second shot onto the green. His caddy went to the side of the ropes where the kid's father was. The kid's father put on the bib and carried the bag.
So it was
just
great.
A great honor.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. Carried the bag all the way to 18. Although the kid didn't talk to him, it seemed. Right, Michael? It seemed like the kid didn't talk
Gotta
to him.
Got to try to post a number.
You know, yeah. So all things considered, that is... You know, I'm not a big Father's Day person. It's a made-up holiday. It's like Mother's Day and Father's Day. Stop. You know, but Grandparents' Day, you know, okay. You know, it's not, they're made up. But it's a very warm feeling to see Wyndham Clark's dad being flown in on the red eye from Denver.
That was great.
And to come out, Wyndham Clark didn't know his dad was there. And that was a great touch. So it was really, really nice. Anything you want to add, Michael?
No, just the golf course looked beautiful. Great job with the visuals. And I think for those who are trying to get into golf course architecture, they did a very good job of showing these series of triangles as to why the holes become so difficult when you're trying to get a different wind. You're trying to feel comfortable, and every hole is playing into a slightly different breeze. And it's just these little triangles that you see all around the golf course.
Really,
and it all
really
starts
nice.
From that clubhouse that, you know, you couldn't...
beautiful.
The clubhouse felt like it was the... you know, is sort of the final character boss trying to get through at Shinnecock.
The quintessential shabby chic, right?
Yep.
It is nothing better than this. You know, the sort of wood shingled, beautiful clubhouse, not ornate, just great out there in the wind, just great. And I'm deferring to Michael's. Michael's not with us physically. Sean is helping us today, and Michael is not here, but we'll be back on Wednesday. So we'll take a break. Is it Wilbon when we return?
That's
Michael
right.
Wilbon when we return. We'll see if he'll blast Scotty Scheffler. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Pete Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle. Wilbon will be happy guessing that Michael raise a glass of Chardonnay for PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle. In 2016, the Cubs broke the curse. 10 years later, PCA has a cycle in reverse. Homer, triple, double, single, then gets picked off first. But in the end, Cubs won, so it could have been worse. Pete Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle, but the Cubs could use some pitching. Fergie Jenkins, Dallas Keuchel, for young kids in Chicago, PCA is their idol. And now PCA hit for the cycle.
Holy cow! How great was that, Wilbon? How great was that?
Yeah, he's certainly paying much more attention to the Cubs than I am.
Yeah, it's Dan Byrne. It's the great Dan Byrne. I should read this from Bill Fisher in Elmwood Park in Illinois. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage for the last 38 years, and I attended Dan Byrne's show last night at Fitzgerald Historic Music Venue in Berwyn, Illinois, outside of Chicago. After getting a TK salute from Dan for shouting out La Cheeserie, Dan proceeded to call my wife Lodian, L-O-D-E-A-N, Lodian, Lodian, up on stage to hold lyrics to Pope Italian Beef. I'm including a photo of that as well as a picture of Dan and I giving the salute right back at you. Isn't that nice?
That's lovely.
What is there a siren? Is that outside where you are? Is that where you are?
Yeah, outside where I'm driving. Yep.
Okay,
in
that's fine.
District of Columbia, near your house.
Okay. How much of the Open did you watch?
I got to watch Sunday, really only Sunday.
Right.
You know, snippets before that, but it was not a weekend for television for me. So, but I got to watch everything that was important yesterday in really the most underwhelming U.S. Open I have ever watched.
Are you satisfied with the winner?
See, that's great, Tony, that you use that word. It was not satisfying for me.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean anything. He should be. I mean, you win a second U.S. Open if you're Wyndham Clark or a fan of Wyndham Clark. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty incredible, the list of people who've won two. And then there's only, I don't know, nine or whatever who've won wire to wire. I don't care about wire to wire. But, and I guess he was tied, if that counts, for a hole yesterday. But it was, it wasn't satisfying for me. Part of it was, there was a decided lack of excitement whenever I watched from the venue.
Yeah.
And then I've been reading and listening to people who said it was very sparsely attended, just by design, I'm sure. It's not like Metropolitan New York can't come up with fans to watch golf. But it wasn't, you know, a big attendance. And I'm not looking for the waste management in Scottsdale. I'm not looking for that. But then, I mean, yesterday when Clark won, and Matthew said this, who's been following golf for 5 years, he just goes, Dad, that sounds like the reaction when you've made a good shot, not won the U.S. Open. And I could not have said it any better myself. But anyway, I don't want to, like, try to rain on his parade. It just, for me, it was like, all right, that was definitely the least of the three major championships this year.
But I know you were very satisfied that Scottie Scheffler, who was in position, to overtake Wyndham Clark, as it turned out. I know you were happy. This, not that he didn't, but like you did say to me yesterday, I don't want to hear about this. I don't want to hear that he's the greatest player ever, because it was out there for him, and it was, right?
Yeah, it was, first of all. But I don't think that Scottie Scheffler didn't do anything wrong. I mean, the course beat up everybody. How many people finished under par? Two or three?
Three. Just three. Just
okay,
three.
So the coach beat up the course, Shinnecock Hills, which we were told that, and we know that the U.S. Open is supposed to be a torture chamber. It prides itself on that. And Scottie Scheffler, you know, people need to stop with. And again, I told you one. The thing I like about Scottie Scheffler the most, other than he's a great player, is that he has said when people have brought up in press conferences, Tiger and Jack, and sort of comparisons. Scheffler has said out loud, stop. I'm not in that conversation. Don't put me in that conversation. And I like that he just thinks that's nonsense, because we go too far. And now we're going to go too far on Wyndham Clark. We go too far on everybody. It's just that it was Scottie Scheffler the last 3 years.
Did you watch any soccer over the weekend? I mean, I didn't.
I watch a little soccer every day, including last night with New Zealand. I watch some of the World Cup every day. And, you know, I wanted to see Spain. I wanted to see Lamine Yamal. I watched him score a goal in a 3-0 first half for Spain. And I don't know what happened after that, because then I was like, okay, I got no sleep on Saturday night with travel on Sunday morning at 4 a.m. Let me get a nap. And I did that until the main draw of golf started. But Lamine Yamal is, to me, again, not just to me, the people of the world over, watching 18-year-old Lamine Yamal of Spain, is like watching, Shohei, or like watching Wimby. And these are three international, these are global icons who people are obsessed with watching. And they don't disappoint you. That's the thing. Now, maybe they're not ready to win the whole thing yet. Shohei has and is with Shohei is also 13 years older than Lamine Yamal.
That's right.
And I
That's
think
right.
8 years older than Wemby. And so Shohei has delivered as promised, and the other two are in the process of it. But Lamine Yamal, man, the goal he scored yesterday was just scream out loud. And so, yes, I'm watching some of World Cup every day.
Is there any team that is decidedly better or worse than you thought going in? I mean, this is not a question
the
I can answer.
United States so far better.
Yeah.
You know, going in with those two wins, decisive wins. Worse, Brazil. And, you know, Spain got out of that category yesterday, while I don't know the final score, by winning big. Maybe not. I mean, England hasn't done anything spectacular yet. But the teams, Tony, the thing is, because they're now 48 teams. And
yeah.
32 are going to advance. So it's only 16 teams that aren't advancing.
Oh,
and so those 16 teams
that.
Are sort of, yeah. You know, there's 8 third place teams advancing.
Well,
so
if there are 32.
We're not at the place to answer it yet. Yeah.
If they're at 32 in the next round, does that begin the one and done knockout?
The knockout.
At 32.
Phase beyond group play. Yeah.
At 32. Okay, so it's a knockout situation. Okay, all right. You want to talk about Serena Williams?
Well, every day we've been hit with a big finish question in our show, end of the show, you know, rapid response, about Serena playing doubles with whomever. And I have said, we know where this is going. This is going one place. I mean, Serena Williams is on television advertising GLP stuff and talking about weight loss and talking about the condition she feels she's in athletically and personally. And to me, all of this forecasts where we're going,
yep.
which is Serena feels great and she's going to come back and play at 44
That's right.
years old.
That's right.
And so this is an enormous story. I have no idea how good she will be, although I just think women's tennis is the toughest sport of all to be 44 years old, because there are people who are 16 and 17 who pop up every year, who beat people's brains out for a couple of years and then sort of maybe fade back into the woodwork, and they are not Serena Williams. They do not have her impact on the game the way Serena Williams has, but they can beat you. And so she's going to get the final, you know, wild card spot into Wimbledon. And I can't wait to see it. Like, is she going to crush some girl who's going to say, I idolized Serena Williams from the time I was 3? Or is somebody who has been idolizing her from the age of 3 going to crush her?
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really, really, really fascinating thing to watch in the week ahead.
And all of this is nice to talk about, but why don't you tell people what you did over the weekend?
Well, I didn't, you know, sports was not the number one thing on my agenda this weekend, because I went to my hometown to celebrate with a lot of other people the opening of the Presidential Center, the Obama Presidential Center, Barack and Michelle, which is located on a street that I have driven down 2,000 times in my life, Stony Island in Chicago and South Side of Chicago. And the opening ceremonies, if you will, plural, of the Obama Center were way, 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 way more. I mean, we anticipated everybody who was involved went. And by involved, I mean the most famous people, some of the most famous people on the planet were there, particularly in entertainment. You know, when you have everybody who's done late night, you know, it seems, since Johnny Carson, people who command enormous audiences, and Oprah Winfrey, and, you know, Tom Hanks, and people, in entertainment and media, who are enormous people who have been sort of fans of not just Obama, but progressive life in America, which I'm a fan of. I am a non-noticeable part of it, but that's the life I care about in America. People gathered to support the Obamas opening the Presidential Center in Chicago. And that opening was, the music alone made it the greatest concert I've ever seen. Which early on in the proceedings, early on, not the showstopper, early on included U2. You know, Jennifer Hudson, Chicago's own, from the South Side, from that neighborhood, sang the national anthem. And it went on from there through, you know, you two and through, you know, I'm going to forget people who wound up, you know, Common and John Legend and people, again, Common from the South Side. But it wound up with, Bruce Springsteen saying, after doing an incredible song, saying, let me just introduce you people to one of my idols, Stevie Wonder.
This is pretty
and
good.
Stevie Wonder then does, good. You know, like Signed, Sealed, Delivered.
Yeah.
Right? With Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, it's pretty
And
good.
All these people go back to the stage and they do this stuff together. But like John Legend is now accompanying them. And it's so, greatest concert of my life. And the speeches were, you know, I went back and watched Barack's speech, which I loved more. But the second time around, Michelle Obama delivered a one of the great pieces of oratory I have ever experienced, and I'm a fan of speeches in public life, and I was amazed, and like many people, had, you know, tears streaming down my face while sitting there listening to and watching her as she sat as the backdrop behind her, our presidents, you know, her husband, Clinton, and Bush.
Yeah,
and Biden,
very, very,
and
very
their
nice.
Spouses.
So respectful.
It was just,
yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and you know, I was asked to do something, which was, you know, I was asked to do something by President number 44 when he thought about opening this center, and I certainly obliged. And it was a weekend that David Letterman, when I talked to him, called.
Yeah, he's your best friend now, right? Letterman's your best friend.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the most uplifting of his life.
Yeah,
and there are plenty of places you can see David Letterman and Tom Hanks talk about the weekend to that effect on whatever social media you follow. But so for me, it was one of the great weekends of my life.
That's great. That's great. All right. Yeah, I will see you later. I'll see you later.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. Steve Sands will join us when we return. He doesn't have to talk about soccer. He can talk about golf. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony K sails the sea with a weathered hand. Salt on his skin like the grains of the sand. His boat named Freedom cuts through the spray. But in the off-season, he dreams of clay. Tony K digs in the dirt so deep where the ocean ends and the fields don't sleep. From the brine to the soil, his heart does wrong. A captain at sea, a farmer at home. He plants his rose with the sailor's care, each potato seed like a treasure. No stormy waves, no rolling tide, just a quiet patch where his dreams reclaim. Tony K.
Let's understand something. This is sent to us by Jessie, the Penbox lady from Mikutowski Woodworking. She writes, this song masterfully crafts a narrative around a man defined by two distinct yet equally potent aspirations. One part of him yearns for the deck of a boat, the thrill of leadership, and the endless expanse of the ocean. The other finds solace and purpose in the rich soil, dreaming of rows of flourishing potatoes. It's a beautiful, intricate look at the paradox of his passions, where the call of the captain and the quiet ambition of the farmer coexist, creating a compelling portrait of a life between two worlds. That's brilliant in and of itself. This thing is AI. This song is, it's not a person.
No.
It's AI.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
It's
freakish. It's just completely freakish. We played it before. We're playing it again because we like Jenny so much. It plays in Steve Sands. And I have this note, Steve, from Mark Lynch in Canby, Indiana. Do me a favor. The next time Steve Sands is on, ask him how he feels about Duke soccer. That's funny. Comment on Duke soccer? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
F Duke with all things Duke.
Yeah.
All sports Duke. Can't stand Duke. Mark from Indiana. By the way, Mark, my middle son, Mark, from Canby, Indiana, my middle son is an IU grad. He got to go to the national championship game and enjoy the Hoosiers with that run.
The football.
College football.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I like Indiana, Mark. I do not like Duke. All things.
Okay. Let me get to this to start with. I wasn't aware of it, and it was finally mentioned on the show, and then it became a talking point of some importance. people were rooting against Wyndham Clark yesterday, right? Like you could hear it, you could sense it, yes?
Tony, you weren't aware of it?
Not as much as I should have been, no.
Wow, it was vicious, man. There were some seriously harsh things yelled at Wyndham Clark yesterday. He's an American. It wasn't like it was a Ryder Cup on Long Island at Bethpage Black.
Yeah.
Like, it was wild, man. It was, look, I've said this to you before, Tony, I don't mind this. The right guy won, and he handled his business, and he did not react too badly to all of the things that were said to him and all the boos and the jeers and the cheers when he hit a bad shot, those kinds of things. But when you allow sports fans into the golf world and you're trying to grow the game, if you will, there's that phrase, grow the game. If you're trying to grow the game to the masses, and the major championships do that more than the regular season PGA Tour events, more of a golf core audience there. But if you're going to have the game be broadened out to football and basketball and hockey and baseball and horse racing and tennis and every other sport, you are going to get fans who are going to get unruly. And we saw a lot of that yesterday. Wyndham was roughed up yesterday. I don't mean that physically. I just mean verbally.
The USGA removed people at the turn, right?
Yeah. There's something on the back of the ticket. I don't know exactly what it says. But just like any other sporting event, if you cross a certain line, you're out of there. And sometimes players on the PGA Tour have people removed most of the time, 99% of the time. They just take it. They don't care. They realize they're athletes. Again, they realize that the broadening of golf into the mainstream sports world is going to bring in sports fans who don't normally have the same decorum as old school golf people. But they know that, and they understand that. Wyndham understands that. But the USGA had enough of a few people yesterday. They crossed the line in their estimation, and they tossed them out.
Was this about Oakmont, I assume, and the lockers, I assume?
It was about Oakmont. It was about the locker room, which, you know, we've talked about before, what Wyndham did last year after the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And, you know, it was also about Scotty trying to win the career Grand Slam.
Yeah.
It was Scotty's birthday. It was, you know, all things Scotty being in that final group, having a chance to complete the career Grand Slam. Scotty's just a more popular player amongst fans with Wyndham compared to Wyndham. But I was shocked that there was so much vitriol towards Wyndham. I didn't realize that Oakmont piece of the puzzle was that prevalent or was that well known, if you will, outside of the golf circles. He's also addressed it a few times professionally, addressed it personally. And man, he was really roughed up yesterday. And to handle that, Tony, I mean, you know, mentally, you know, for him, he works a lot with Julie Ellion, who is a sports psychologist, who, by the way, is a DC gal.
Yes.
And she's great. And man, they've had their work cut out for them. And it worked yesterday, because to get through that yesterday and not have that make you go sideways, not just in your mind, but in your game, that was a pretty strong effort.
I will say that I saw Scheffler's post-game press conference, and he was asked about this, and he said, look, I just don't want to go into this. I'll say this once. There's fans who do what they do, and you'd rather it didn't happen. You don't like it, but I don't want to keep talking about this. So I imagine this is out there, that this whole thing affected the other golfers. It must have.
Oh, without question. Tiger Woods used to tell me all the time, in his heyday, beyond his heyday, when he was in his heyday, he said, these people have never heard anything until they've been me. I've heard it all. And I'm talking about pre-trouble and post-trouble, the personal stuff, all that kind of stuff. He goes, I've heard it all. He goes, that's just the way fans are. That's the way sports is.
Yeah.
It has not creeped its way into golf as much, but it certainly has. In certain spots, you could go back to Bethpage Black. We chatted about this
with Rory,
with the fans and Rory. But Wyndham's American. Wyndham is a United States guy, and I just didn't realize, I don't think anybody realized that yesterday was going to go the way it did. I think it was more that he was playing with Scotty, who is beloved, than it was what happened with Oakmont. But having said that, he really hurt it yesterday, and man, he was tough from the collarbones
yes,
up to get through.
I would give him tremendous credit for hanging in there, and he did not play well. He said afterwards he didn't play well. He was 3 over on the day. Did you think at any point that he would actually lose the tournament?
You know, it's funny. I never thought he was going to lose it. I was on the first half of the air before getting out of there on NBC the second half. And when we were on, we were talking, I was with Jim Furyk up there and Kurt Byram and Aaron Oberholzer and all of our crew. And we were all talking about it on and off the air. And I just thought, you know, 6 shots, 20 out of 21 times in the history of the sport, Tony, has someone had a 6-shot lead or more at a major championship and gone on to win? The only time it
did
was the 1996, exactly, the 1996 Masters with Greg Norman. Norman shot 76 that day. Faldo shot 67. So if Wyndham shot 76 yesterday, all right, 76, Scotty would have had a broken par to win. It's hard to break par. You know, there are a lot of guys who started the day 6 shots back, but let's just go with Scotty. And I never thought he was going to lose it, only because I just didn't think anybody was going to be able to shoot a crazy low number. I'm not talking about 66, 67. I'm talking about 63, 64. And that didn't happen. And Wyndham hung in there, shot 73, which a lot of people shoot 73 at a U.S. Open, especially on a Sunday. And he had enough of a cushion that allowed him. That's why Thursday, these guys tell us all the time, they miss a little one on Thursday, it comes back to haunt them on Sunday. Well, he didn't miss any of those little ones on Thursday.
He shot 64. He had the best round of the tournament. He won the tournament on Thursday. He did.
And he went wire to wire, Tony.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to win a regular PGA Tour event, sleeping on the lead every night? He had the lead the entire U.S. Open and held on to it and won.
He did.
I know he only won by one. I know it was tight in the end. But, man, was he money coming down the stretch when he had to be.
The birdie, 17. The birdie on 15. 16, rather.
16, yeah.
Yeah, that clinched it. Nobody really pressured him. Nobody ever tied him. He never got in a position where he could look at the board and say, oh, I am not the sole leader anymore. I'll bet that's a big deal.
Oh, I think it's a huge deal. And if you relate that to sports, since we're talking about sports and golf, you know, being as one, we see it all the time in the NFL or college football or the NBA or college basketball. You get out to this big lead and the other team makes a run. Unless that team actually grabs the lead, not just gets it to within one or two or gets it to within a touchdown or gets it to win one possession in basketball, if they actually get the lead, that changes the narrative. Well, in this case, Sam Burns made a massive run. Now, if Sam Burns makes that putt at 18, which he barely missed, and he had that great reaction when he missed, and he ties them there, that may have changed the way things went at the end, but nobody got right there. They got close, but they never got right there with him or beyond him, and I think that was a huge boon to Wyndham. Every time he looked up at a leaderboard, and there are leaderboards
everywhere
on every hole.
He's in
every
the lead.
Time he looked, exactly. Every time he looked at a leaderboard, Tony, he saw Clark on top of it, and that had to allow him to breathe a little easier.
If Burns had made that putt after Wyndham Clark bogeys 17,
it's an entirely
different deal. And he hit another bad tee shot. He had bad shot after bad tee shot, but he made his approach putt on 18 was fabulous, right? Landed within a half a foot, right? Fabulous.
I've said this on the air before. The least sexiest part of the game at the highest level is lag putting. No one ever talks about it. No one ever thinks about it. No one ever mentions it. That putt was so good, Tony.
Oh.
Can you imagine? You would imagine, like, the first tee at Augusta, his hands and arms had to be trembling there. His mind had to be racing there. He had to buckle down and get that thing within a couple of feet. He got it within a couple of inches almost.
Yeah.
And if that was a 4 or 5 footer,
different.
That's they're probably still playing. I mean, was such a great lag putt, and no one ever talks about lag putting. It is one of the most, maybe the most remarkable thing that PGA Tour players do day in, day out. They're putting from a long distance to cozy it up there and tap it in is something that, you know, all of us who play the game, we dream of doing that.
So much was made of the fact that the previous couple of opens at Shinnecock were really hard on the players. So they widened the fairways and, you know, the phrase, let Shinnecock be Shinnecock. And in the end, there's only 3 guys under par. In the end, yep. After 72 holes, the course wins, right? It wins and should.
It is. I've never been a boss. I've never hired and fired anybody. I've only worked for people my whole life. But I think the best bosses, the best leaders, are the ones who not only criticize you in a manner in which it's going to improve your standing or your work or your position, but they also praise you when you do something correct. And as much as the USGA gets crap for losing the golf course and goofing it up and doing this or doing that, kudos to the USGA last week. The forecast called for crazy wind. They dialed it back. They don't want people getting the low numbers. They did not get afraid when someone shot an opening day 64 in Wyndham Clark. They did not get afraid the next day when a couple of players shot 65. They softened the course enough so that it was playable in those crazy winds. They knew the forecast was coming. The fairways were widened a little bit. But the widening of the fairways didn't matter. The ball still tumbled in.
It did.
It
went into the rough.
They did something brilliant, I thought. One of the things they did brilliantly was they widened the fairways, but they didn't have a graduated rough. It went from fairway to primary rough. Not the fescue stuff, but primary rough. The primary rough was almost more difficult than the fescue stuff. And when you widen fairways that way, and then you have a little bit of rough before it gets big, now you're widening them even farther. They widened those fairways out to an average of 48 yards from 42 the last time in 2018. But because they started the primary rough right on the edge, it was still incredibly penal. The greens were the key, though, Tony. When you roll greens 11.5, 12, 12.5 at Shinnecock, when the wind is gusting to 43, 48 miles per hour, you can't play golf. They would have had to stop play. The only time they stopped play was because of fog.
The fog
on Thursday morning from 7:05 a.m. to 9:05 a.m. Other than that, they didn't have to hold play because they did the right thing and slowed the golf course down. And in the end, like you said, nobody got to 15, 16 under par.
No.
The winning score was 4. 3 guys were under par, and it was a great U.S. Open.
Yeah, really was. And I would just point out, and
I know
we do this all the time, but, you know, the main live guys, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Cam Smith, they didn't make the cut. They did not make the cut. They all finished +5 or whatever it was and did not make the cut. And Koepka, who had been there, you know, and who had won on this course, he didn't make the cut either, right?
I'll give you one funny quote that I heard. So I'm getting out of the booth on Friday. Let's see, NBC on Friday. Yes, NBC on Friday. It's all on these different channels. It's crazy. I know you love that stuff. But
yeah,
it was I was getting out of the booth, and I was walking back to the TV compound. Dustin Johnson at one point was 4 under par and was 1 back.
Was in it.
He then had a crazy deal going on at 11, kept it in the bunker a few times, and then sculled one over, made an 8. Just craziness. Went from 4 under, 1 shot back of the lead on Friday afternoon, to 4 over par and was basically out of it. And as I was walking out of the booth to go to the TV compound, which is about a 15-minute walk, to the right of us is the 18th hole. He's coming up 18. Some guy looks at me, yells La Cheeserie, which was very nice. Got a million of those. Got a million of those last week. Yells La Cheeserie, and then looks. I go, and I wave. And I go, thank you. How you doing? And I stop and he say hello. And the guy looks at me with a straight face. Same guy who yells La Cheeserie looks at me and says, "I guess Dustin Johnson can't handle playing in pants." which is a dig at LIV players because they play in shorts in that league. It was a very funny line.
It's his birthday today, Dustin Johnson's birthday today, and at least he made the cut. You know, at least he made the cut. So anyway, all right. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And are you going to the British Open?
Of course.
Good.
Of course.
So we'll talk to you from the British Open. Oh, are you going to
Royal Birkdale?
Are you going to Bristol for the tournament this week?
That will not be in Hartford.
The Bristol Open?
For the fifth major, no.
Yeah.
I will not be in Hartford this week. I'm off this week. Next week is actually pretty cool. Do something I've never done. I'm doing a champs event, the U.S. Senior Open. Go back and see some of the old guys who I haven't seen in a long time. It'd be fun to see Ernie Els and guys like that, Mike Weir and VJ Singh and Potter.
That's in Scioto, right? That's in Ohio.
Scioto. Yeah, originally, before Tiger got into his mess, and I'm so glad that he's trying to get healthy again and all that type of thing. But before he went over to Switzerland and did that, there was a lot of chatter, that he was going to play in the U.S. Senior Open. So I'm going to be in the booth for that. I haven't done that event ever, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of those guys that we used to cover years ago. But it's the biggest event on the PGA Tour Champions, and next week I'll be doing that. Interestingly, one of the reasons Tiger wants to play in that, and he will attempt to play in it next year if he doesn't go in next week. I can't imagine he's going to play next week, but who knows? Mm-hmm. No one in the history of the sport, Tony, has ever won the U.S. Junior Amateur, U.S. Amateur, U.S. Open, and U.S. Senior Open. Not even Jack. Nobody has ever won all four of those big USGA events in men's golf, and Tiger has a chance to do it. And he wanted to do it so badly at Scioto next week because that's Jack's hometown.
It's Jack's
Columbus,
course.
Ohio.
Yeah, Jack's course.
So that would have been really cool. So I will not be in Hartford. I'll be in Columbus, Ohio next week.
I won't be in Hartford either. All right, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Steve.
All right, you got it, Tony. Take care.
Steve Sands, boys and girls. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some faxes and your nets. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks. Gonna read some for all your folks.
Tom Mosser being accompanied by Dan Byrne.
Love that.
One of the things that make us laugh all the time. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bagel Sandwich Day.
Michael, you missed it.
Yeah, sorry.
Sean, you missed it.
Yeah, sorry, guys. But we love them, and you will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
And before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, imagine me and you. I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. We play that because Howard Kalin, one of the two lead singers in the Turtles, this is his 79th birthday today. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Steve Sands. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review.
Glad you had a good Father's Day.
Who did?
Glad you had a good Father's Day. I know you're a big believer in the holiday.
No, not much for me, but I'm glad you had a good Father's Day. Yeah. From our friend Sam Angel in Silver Spring, Maryland. Happy Father's Day, Grandpa. How did Carol shoot? Could she find her way out of the traps? That's funny. Frank Kelly in Scituate, Massachusetts. Dear potato farmer, I've been fortunate to have several emails read over the years calling Bob Ryan on the floor at the LA Forum during a Celtics-Lakers game to settle a bet the time I celebrated getting his PhD from Harvard by umpiring my farm league third grade baseball game where the old man squeezed the pitcher. Me when I threw the ball over the backstop and he called it a ball. But you and Michael and Bootsy playing in the father-son tournament brought back another memory of me and the old man on the golf course because it sounds like the time you two stopped talking on the third hole. It was the early 80s. We were playing the Governor Tobin Memorial Member Guest at Hatherley Country Club in North Scituate, Massachusetts. The old man's cap was, I think, 17, and due to a sandbagging incident a couple of years earlier, playing unattached, I was assigned a 10 handicap. 40 years later, the best index has been 13. The old man, like you do, Tony, had a crew of several guys who tossed the balls up on Saturday and Sunday morning and play together. We had won our first match on Friday, and on Saturday we were playing two gentlemen brothers who we were meeting for the first time. The member was a 20 who mostly played with his son and daughter after work. The brother was the guest, was a 24 from a club that was known to be an easier layout than Hatherley. We started on 10, and they were kicking the snot out of us. I think we were five down on our ninth hole as the 24 was two over on his own ball. I'd been hitting first, but told Dad, let's change the batting order. 18 is a 189-yard par 3 with a back-to-front sloping green. Field a rough on the right side, giant rocks in the clubhouse on the left. The old man puts his Titleist on the tee, hits his 3-iron, and the ball is tracking to the stick. Great shot, Dad, I say as he spins around and says, it's on the damn roof. And sure enough, the ball hits the giant rocks on the left and bounces onto the clubhouse roof. He looks at me with smoke coming out of his ears. Great shot, huh? I don't say anything, put my Titleist on the tee and knock my 4-iron 2 feet below the stick. They make me putt it out. We walk to one, now down by four. I birdied one to get us down to three, but there the historic comeback ends as I put two OB into McCarthy's front lawn on two, and we ended up losing 4-3. The old man has been gone for 31 years on July 3rd, what I wouldn't do just to have 18 more holes with him. This is lovely.
Isn't that great?
Treasure the time out there, even if the boys are just riding in the cart with you. It's a gift. And as a matter of fact, one of the days out in Rehoboth, I played with a father, a son, and a grandson. And the grandson was five and hit four putts on the back of at least 10 feet. The kid was a whiz. It was lovely, just lovely. From Kyle Morricone, Honolulu, Hawaii. Building on the Nigel's suggestion for the Capital Weather website, Littles could subscribe to a Kornheiser tier, which includes access to a daily weather check of the 20015, a Michael is it raining button, Reginald picking between snow shovels and golf clubs for a winter weather preview, and live webcam views of the growing potato crop. Also, it may be a little past the warranty date, but just had to comment on Mr. Tony's comment as people say the Sturm und Drang. Exactly what people are you referring to? Goethe? Schiller? Another poet or writer circa 1800? That's probably the first sports podcast to use that phrase since the last time this podcast used that phrase. Love the show. Please tell David Taba or Taba in Honolulu to eat it. Jeff Barger in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Last week, my family traveled through West Virginia and Pennsylvania. In Pittsburgh, we made a stop based on your recommendation. Jenny's ice cream was fabulous.
Yes.
Below on the right is my combination of darkest chocolate and salted peanut butter. It was terrific. Very reasonably priced. Best waffle cone I've ever had. Thank you, Jenny. Oh, it just looks lovely.
Doesn't that look great?
Looks just great.
Jenny's.
From Peter. Peter Mayer, who writes, I'm a friend of Claudia and Paul, now retired from DOJ. We sat together at Guy Mason Field once watching Michael. Golf. I'm 75. I'm 5'5". I play once in a while. Yesterday's remark about Rory's 194 pitching wedge. I might drive at 175 if I hit it on the screws. Just asking what a good drive, not career, is for you these days. 165, 170. I'm thrilled. Answer can be as short as three digits. It's from Peter, who said that, Michael, do you remember playing at Guy Mason? You were like
all the time,
12, right?
It was the first time you got to play under the lights.
So this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh, just going back to Little League.
Yes, I don't remember.
I then took my kids to that playground behind the baseball.
To Guy Mason. Sure. Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. Matthew McElroy. Dear Tony, on the June 3rd episode, you received an email from the mayor of Frankfort, Kentucky. Well, I'm familiar with that capital. As a high school history teacher, I dedicate a fair amount of time to geography. Plus, my dad was a geography buff, so I became one as well. Similar to you counting things, when I can't go to sleep, I list state capitals. Sometimes north to south, east to west, alphabetical, you get the idea. Anyway, one of the most embarrassing moments of my life came in November 2021 on a little show you may have heard of called Jeopardy. I was doing fairly well when they asked a question about the only southern capital that was captured by the Union forces. I immediately buzzed in and confidently said Lexington, that's Kentucky. If memory serves correct, I lost $600 on that guess. I went on to finish second. When I returned to Wildwood, New Jersey, everyone in the barbershop immediately gave me hell. You see, my barber has a longstanding bet that when he asked someone what the capital of Kentucky is, they will say Lexington or Louisville. And I told my barber why I was getting my hair cut in late November that year. He would have quizzed me on the capital of Kentucky, and who knows how the game would have turned out, because it's Frankfort. It's not Lexington. No, you got it wrong. Now, every time I review the capital of Kentucky with my high school students, I tell them it's worth $600. That's lovely. And, yeah, there's a picture of him on Jeopardy. That's wonderful.
Wow.
Justin Winkleman, Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. While you are unburdened by memory, Uncle Al Michaels is clearly not. The stories he has are amazing. The Littles want more. Yeah, you know, I wrote Uncle Big Al yesterday, And he said he could be on any time.
That's crazy.
You know, so we'll call him. We'll make sure it happens. From Steve the Sycophant. Dear Grandpa, Satchmo, Captain Potato, Goat, my Legion idol. Want to feel really, really old, Satch? Remember Brian Wilson's Beach Boys hit Good Vibrations from 1966? We're now 12 years farther away from that classic than its release date was from the end of World War I. Do you feel ancient? Now try this. The Ford Model T was first produced in 1908, and that is closer in time to the release of Good Vibration than our present day is, 58 to 60 years. I'm heading directly to the old folks' home to listen to a Motown hits compilation. From Ben in Port Hueneme. That's how it's pronounced, Hueneme.
Okay.
Mike Tam in Weatherville, California's AI creation, El Tema Canción del Saco de Correos, is the greatest prompting of technology since Katherine Johnson calculated the trajectory that sent Alan Jeopard to space on May 5th, 1961. That was the song that we had.
Yes, right? That was the great. Yeah, we'll play that again.
From John Tagliarini in Ankeny, Iowa. I ended up at Wrigley on Friday to watch the Midwest showdown between the Cubs and the Toronto Blue Jays. For science in your show, I asked every person I saw in a Blue Jay jersey if they considered Toronto a Midwest city. I'm happy to report 679-0 said no. Kenny Ray, Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Someone needs to get Tommy Fleetwood to use the Johnny O code. At the U.S. Open in Shinnecock, it looked like he went to Goodwill looking for a pair of 32-32 trousers, which they didn't have, so he settled for the 35-36s. Use the code, Tommy. He also wore a Shinnecock Hills shirt yesterday.
Back. He always does that. It's the best.
I'll take one of those.
How can you not love Tommy Fleetwood? How can you not love him?
I do.
One more. Years ago, when my daughter moved to L.A. to get married, she lived in Brentwood, took me to Toscana. Al Michaels was sitting next to us, DJ.
He's got a table.
He's there every night. If you're out on your bike, as always, do wear white.
Who is Tony?
Tony Kornheiser.
Who is that?
That's a PTI guy on ESPN.
Okay.
Pete Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle. Wilbon will be happy guessing that Michael raise a glass of Chardonnay for PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle. In 2016, the Cubs broke the curse. 10 years later, PCA has a cycle in reverse. Homer triple, double, single, then gets picked off first. But in the end, Cubs won, so it could have been worse. Crow Armstrong hit for the cycle, but the Cubs could use some pitching. Fergie Jenkins, Dallas Keuchel, for young kids in Chicago, PCA is their idol, and now PCA hit for the cycle.
Holy cow!
Tony K sails the sea with a weathered hand. Salt on his skin like the grains of the sand. His boat named Freedom cuts through the spray. But in the off-season, he dreams of clay. Tony K digs in the dirt so deep where the ocean ends and the fields don't sleep. From the brine to the soil, his heart does wrong. A captain at sea, a farmer at home. He plants his rows with the sailor's care. Each potato seed like a treasure heir. No stormy waves, no rolling tide, just a quiet patch where his dreams reclaim. Tony K digs in the dirt so deep where the ocean ends and the fields don't sleep. From the brine to the soil, his heart does roam. A captain at sea, a farmer at home. He plants his rows with a sailor's care, each potato seed like a treasure heir. No stormy waves, no rolling tide, just a quiet patch where his dreams are clay. Tony K digs in the dirt so deep where the ocean ends and the fields don't sleep. From the brine to the soil, his heart does roam. A captain at sea, a farmer at home. When the frost creeps in and the sails are furled, he trades his compass for a simpler world. Man of two lives with a single grin. Both the waves and the earth call it doom. Well, the friend, come spring he'll sail, but he'll leave a note to his spuds that sprout near his fishing boat. Tony K lies where two dreams meet, the sailor's soul and the farmer's beat. Tony K digs in the dirt so deep where the ocean ends and the fields don't sleep. From the brine to the soil, his heart does roam.
a captain at sea, a farmer at home, a farmer at home. A farmer at home.